Hello, seafood friends. You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent, bringing you everything from the boats to the boardrooms, breaking down the news, spilling a little industry fish oil, and sharing the sharp market insights you need to know. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. Move aside trade war, we've got the Iran war to focus on now. Some industry sources are warning that frozen seafood prices could rise as much as 10% in the short term, unless the war between US, Israel, and Iran ends. We'll be diving into Undercurrent's latest coverage.
Plus, UCN America's editor Jason Huffman will be calling in to talk about what's going on with Canadian salmon and provide a tariff update. But before we get there, we are a little more than a week away from Seafood Expo North America in Boston, and I feel like we've been reporting on one long game of seafood industry musical chairs.
People moves have definitely been the theme of this week.
And we apologize in advance for butchering any of these names. I tried my best to look up how to pronounce them all before we recorded.
So Undercurrent confirmed this week that Trident Seafood's Senior Vice President of International Operations, Omar Sadiq, is leaving the company after joining the Seattle, Washington-based seafood giant in 2023, following a 29-year career with Cargill. According to his LinkedIn profile, Sadiq was responsible for Trident's international business of operations of the organization across Asia, Europe, the Middle East, and Latin America.
Meanwhile, it was revealed that Norway's Cermaq, which is owned by Japanese conglomerate Mitsubishi Corporation, has parted ways with several executives as it pushes to integrate Grieg Seafood's Canadian assets. Recall that Cermaq purchased fellow Norwegian salmon aquaculture business Grieg Seafood's operations in Finnmark, Norway, and Canada in a deal first announced in July 2025 and completed this past December. Well, in a LinkedIn post that was published on Monday, outgoing production manager Herman Campos said he was pushed out after 36 years at Cermaq, including 19 in Canada. He said the integration process is favoring Grieg executives and shared an internal memo from Cermaq Canada's managing director, revealing that multiple directors are set to depart over the next couple of months. Additional details on who is leaving, as well as previous Grieg moves within Cermaq, can be found in the show notes.
Also in Canada, Whitecap International Seafood Exporters, a major supplier of snow crab, lobster, cooked and peeled shrimp, and other seafood, has been making some moves with both its U.S. and European sales teams. The St. John's, Newfoundland and Labrador-based company has appointed seafood veteran Steve Spicer as its new European sales manager. Spicer most recently served as an area sales manager for Danish seafood importer and distributor Nordic Seafood.
In the U.S., the company has hired Brian Carroll as its sales manager. Before joining Whitecap, Carroll spent 7 years as director of sales at Portland, Maine-based Shucks Maine Lobster, a company that specializes in producing raw shucked and frozen lobster tails and meat using a cold water, high pressure processing system to extract the meat. You may remember that Whitecap signed an exclusive deal with Shucks in 2025 to handle the marketing and export of the company's products.
Rich Products, the owner of CPAC Shrimp and Seafood Brand and Maury's Fine Fish and Seafood, has also made a change to its sales team ahead of the Boston show. The company has promoted its longtime national account manager, Max Noodleman, to director of sales for club and e-commerce. Congratulations to my fellow Future Leaders classmate.
The musical chairs continue with King & Prince, a supplier of coated seafood and other value-added products to the food service sector, which has hired Steve Young, the former CEO of New Zealand's Sea Lord Group, to become its next president and CEO effective April 20th. Young will be taking over from Michael Alexander, who will be retiring after 15 years with the company. More details on Young's appointment can be found in the show notes.
Meanwhile, scallop supplier Northern Wind has appointed Stuart R. Benton as its new chief financial officer. Benton previously served as CFO of Riser, a global food processing and equipment supplier. Northern Wind CEO Ken Mallinson described the addition of Benton to the company as a pivotal moment in growth trajectory. In the role, Benton will oversee Northern Wind's financial strategy, governance, and core finance functions while working closely with the board and executive leadership to support expansion efforts. The company said Benton will play a key role in advancing strategic initiatives, including mergers and acquisitions, capital allocation, and operational alignment as Northern Wind continues to build out its vertically integrated seafood platform.
And in another interesting move, seafood restaurant chain Red Lobster is reshaping its executive bench with two senior hires. The Orlando, Florida headquartered company announced that it has named Brad Hill as Chief Financial Officer and Executive Vice President of Transformation, alongside Kristen Bride as Chief Global Development Officer. The appointments revealed that CEO Damola Adam Lakin is turning to his former colleagues at Scottsdale, Arizona-based PF Chang's to aid with Red Lobster's next phase. Hill and Bride each bring experience from PF Chang's, where Adam Lakin previously served as CEO from 2019 until 2023 before taking the helm at Red Lobster in 2024 as part of a turnaround effort following the chain's bankruptcy.
And finally, Danny Alva, one of U.S. shrimp importer Del Pacifico Seafood's original employees, has rejoined the company to lead its sales and marketing efforts. Alva helped found the Blue Shrimp Specialist in 2014, but left in 2021. He said he's drawn back to Del Pacifico due to the company's renewed commitment to its core mission.
I'm sure we missed some announcements, and I'm sure there are still some coming. But for now, I'm ending this game of seafood industry musical chairs because we have some other big company news to cover, like Norwegian cod farmer Oed's latest acquisition.
Norway's largest producer of farmed Atlantic cod announced this week it has acquired land-based aquaculture company Lumarine in a move to strengthen its vertically integrated production model. Lumarine operates what Ode describes as Norway's largest juvenile cod production facility, producing approximately 1,500 metric tons of juvenile cod in 2025. The company has been a key supplier to Ode through a partnership dating back to 2022. Following the acquisition, the company plans to invest in further modernization and expansion of Blue Marine facility, targeting an output of 5,000 metric tons of juvenile cod by 2027. Oed said Blue Marine has significant potential for further development and expansion, with the potential to reach an annual production volume of around 100,000 tons of market-sized cod within the next 5 years.
Oed CEO Ola Kvalheim told Undercurrent at the North Atlantic Seafood Forum in Bergen this week that the time had come for Ode, which had been renting out Lemarine's facility date, to buy the plant and invest in its expansion as it sets its sight on the lofty ambition of 100,000 metric tons of cod by 2030. The full story from Undercurrent Deputy EMEA Editor Dan Gibson can be found in the show notes. And if you haven't done so already, visit Undercurrent to check out the live blog from the North Atlantic Seafood Forum. Dan and EMEA editor Neil Ramsden have been reporting from Norway all week. Hopefully, we'll have them on the podcast next week to talk about the event.
In other acquisition news, Indian tech-enabled seafood player Captain Fresh, officially named InfraFresh Food Tech, has announced the acquisition of Freemii, one of Spain's largest tuna processors and distributors. Freemii, which generates revenues exceeding 180 million euros and operates across 33 countries, commands more than 20% of Europe's yellowfin tuna market. Additional details on that acquisition can also be found in the show notes.
On the other end of things here, Panamanian cobia farmer Open Blue is ending commercial operations this month. Undercurrent confirmed that the company, which is part of the Kuna Del Mar portfolio of aquaculture firms owned by Walmart heiress Christy Walton, began the transition to focus exclusively on research and development in the first quarter of 2026. The full story on undercurrentnews.com. Now, onto the war.
Which one?
I can't believe we have options, but we'll start with the Iran war. As we teased earlier, some industry sources have warned Undercurrent that frozen seafood prices could rise as much as 10% in the short term unless the war between US, Israel, and Iran ends. A buyer at one of the largest seafood processors in Europe told Undercurrent this week that so far, frozen seafood prices haven't been significantly affected because the situation is still recent. But they said there is speculation that costs could rise, mainly due to higher fuel prices, pushing fishing companies to charge more, although no actual changes have taken place yet. They said at the moment, prices are holding steady.
Undercurrent's Maddie Marighetti reported this week that the global skipjack tuna market remains largely stable, though tightening supply and higher costs are beginning to create upward price pressure in the Western and Central Pacific Ocean, according to industry sources. Rising operating costs, with crude oil prices rising to their highest level since 2024 following the start of a war between the U.S., Israel, and Iran on February 28th, are increasingly shaping sentiment in the Western and Central Pacific Ocean region. Some industry players in Asia pointed to higher fuel prices, longer freight times, and more expensive logistics as key pressures across the supply chain.
So far, the most significant impact on the seafood trade has been on air freight, particularly salmon exports to Asia. The conflict has removed 18% of global air freight capacity virtually overnight. Fresh Atlantic salmon, the Gulf's dominant high-value fish import, moves on temperature-controlled pallets from Norway and Scotland, both head-on and gutted, and as fresh fillets, much of it transiting through Dubai. These hubs handle Scottish and Chilean salmon bound onward to China and East Asia. With hubs offline, those wholesale prices in China have already started moving upwards.
When there's this much uncertainty at play, you need an Undercurrent subscription. Visit the site to stay up to date on how the war is impacting the industry.
Joining us now on the pod is America's editor Jason Huffman, who worked with Lauren this week to report on the Canadian salmon market. Jason, according to your story this week, Canadian salmon farmers have made big cuts to their prices recently in order to clear out a glut of product coming from both East and West Coast operations, but prices are firming again. What's been going on?
Yeah, that's the gist. Just as background, Chile is the U.S.'s biggest supplier of farmed Atlantic salmon, the kind of salmon we most often see in both grocery stores and in restaurants. Chile accounted for more than 208,000 metric tons of U.S. imported Atlantic salmon last year, which is almost half the market. Norway was the second largest source, sending the U.S. almost 79,000 metric tons. Both of those countries send the U.S. most heavily fresh fillets of Atlantic salmon. I'm laying down some background here so I can. We can get into it more. The U.S.'s third largest supplier of Atlantic salmon, and a really important one, is Canada, which sent the U.S. a little more than 64,000 metric tons last year, not a lot less than Norway. And what they send the U.S. mostly, unlike Chile and Norway, is fresh whole salmon. It's the kind of salmon that can be bought more cheaply and cut up into fillets. So as Lauren informed us, the Canadian salmon farms have been selling for a lot less in just the past couple of weeks or so. And it's probably better for Lauren to explain why that's been happening because she is the expert and I leaned heavily on her for this article.
All right, so thank you, Jason, for teeing that up. Oh, yes, over the past 3 weeks, we've seen a pretty aggressive correction in pricing as harvest volumes from both the East and the West Coast came to market at the same time. At one point, the US wholesale price for 10 to 12 pound whole fish dropped by as much as $1.15 per pound. That's close to a 30% decline. So the key thing, though, is that this wasn't really about demand collapsing. It was more about timing and volume management. There was just simply too much fish coming into the market week to week than buyers needed. So spot prices had to adjust to clear the product that was coming in. Another factor that we're looking at is size mix. The pressure has been concentrated in the smaller to mid-size fish, roughly 12 to 14 pounds and under, where some transactions dipped even below $3 a pound. So larger fish have actually held up much better, and that tells us that it's not a full category reset. It's more of a size and balance that we're looking at right now. We're also hearing about biologically mature fish that need to come out of the water, and that adds to the supply glut. So we get this backlog effect where fish rolls from one day into the next. But the excess supply is already starting to work its way through, as this week we're seeing some rebound in pricing. And that's due to a couple of factors. One, we're seeing Lent demand is starting to build. Two, some Canadian producers appear to have pulled back harvesting efforts after those steep discounts. And when that happens, supply begins to tighten pretty quickly, allowing prices to firm. And three, Chilean production has been pulling back since the beginning of the year. So when we see higher prices in other categories, that causes customers to shop around and look at other origins. So the market's moving from clearing volume pretty aggressively to beginning to find a little bit more balance there.
Lauren, you said size mix, and I heard seismic, and maybe it's a
Both
seismic.
apply. Yeah.
So it seems like we're really soon going to see this situation resolved somewhat.
And when we're dealing with fresh fish, you know, these situations come up and they seem pretty big when they're happening. But fresh markets move rather quickly. So as fast as they come into play, they're usually on their way out as just as fast. But, you know, in this day and age, anything goes. So we're always keeping a close eye on the markets here.
Well, speaking of trade data, salmon trade data, by the way, was just one small part of a big report I delivered about a week ago on U.S. seafood imports and exports. We were finally able to get the latest numbers on what the U.S. imported and exported in 2025. And as we do every year, I took a look at how it went using lots of charts and tables in the story. You may not have seen the movie yet, but I'm going to spoil the ending for you. In spite of some $2.2 billion in tariffs spent on seafood in 2025, imports went up. The U.S. imported 3.3 million metric tons worth $26.6 billion. It was a small volume increase of 2% and a value increase of 3% over 2024. Our biggest import items by value, again, as they are pretty much every year, were shrimp, salmon, and tuna. Canada was again our most valuable seafood source country. Chile was second and India third. The crazy thing is that the U.S. seafood trade imbalance actually shrunk last year. Seafood exports were equal to 21% of imports last year, better than the 19% seen the year before. And that's because seafood exports were way up in 2025. The U.S. exported 1.3 million metric tons of seafood worth $5.6 billion. That's 10% more volume and 12% more value. What happened? The big export winners for the U.S. last year were salmon, Alaska pollock, and lobster. One thing we know that happened was that salmon is a certain species that comes in stronger every other year, certain species of salmon. And last year was a really strong year for pinks.
Looking at imports, you said were up just a small amount. Do you think it was just like the panic from the tariffs this year?
No, good question. Yeah. So what happened was, you remember that the tariffs went into effect in April, small 10% global tariff rate, not small if you're the importer. And then Trump warned that bigger tariffs were coming, and then those came in August. So there was a rush to import a lot of goods between April and August or through July. And then when August happened, if you look at the year-to-year comparisons for every month, imports go down, but they still didn't go down enough to undercut the earlier increases. So that's what we saw. If the pattern continues from the end of the year forward, then 2026 will be a year where we probably see less imports.
Now, talking about tariffs, something we just cannot avoid in our day-to-day conversation. Lauren and I were saying, now we've got two wars on our hands to talk about. What's going on with the trade war? What's going on the tariff front?
Well, this is the show that will never end, it seems like. And there was a little bit of excitement this week on the tariff front. As I keep preaching to the reporting team, that February 20th ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court did not end all of the drama on President Trump's tariffs and their impact on the seafood industry. No, we're back now for a second streaming season as the president looks to issue new tariffs and seafood importers go about trying to get refunds on the $2.1 billion they have paid. And there's a lot of unknowns. So first, a few hundred more companies have filed lawsuits against the administration in an attempt to get their refunds following the Supreme Court ruling. Roughly 10 of those are seafood companies. AquaStar is probably the most notable to add its name to the list. Then second, there was a ruling by the Court of Appeals for this First Circuit on Monday that remanded the case to the U.S. Court of International Trade. The Trump administration fought that. And then a judge at the U.S. Court of International Trade late on Wednesday basically ruled that Customs and Border Protection were required to pay refunds in relation to the tariffs for which the entries have not yet been liquidated or the liquidation has not yet been made final. It's one of a couple of decisions we expect to hear. Attorney Jessica Rifkin, who I interviewed for this story, spent some time explaining this decision to me, and she stressed that this is a really important ruling.
Jason, thanks so much for breaking down everything from the salmon to the imports, exports, everything that's going on with the trade war. What would we do without you?
Anytime.
Now, before we go, I have some exciting news to share. Undercurrent has launched its global groundfish price tracker, expanding its suite of species-specific data tools and strengthening its coverage of one of seafood's most globally traded categories. The tracker brings together 806 data sets covering auction data, European wholesale pricing, U.S. wholesale price assessments, and global export benchmarks into a single interactive platform, giving users visibility into price movements throughout the supply chain from first sale through finished product. All UCN Pro subscribers have access to the tracker. If you don't have access and would like to learn more about adding this tool to your subscription, we'll provide a link in the show notes.
You know, that is very exciting news, but I also thought you were going to say something else.
Like what?
Like that you're getting a dog.
I am getting a dog. And now we need to solicit some seafood heavy dog food this way.
Exactly. So if you're in Boston and you have dog products, Lauren and I are your girls. We just got two new pups. We want to know what's out in the market. So I used to feed Shay. I haven't gotten Daisy on fish oil yet, but we used to give Shay a couple pumps of fish oil, Alaska Pollock oils, because I said that specifically to our vet one time. And he's like, you give fish oil? I'm like, Alaska Pollock oil. He's like, what?
And you're like, I'll get you a pamphlet.
I'm glad you asked, sir. And he's like, I didn't ask.
Calling up Craig Morris right now.
Oh my gosh, I cannot wait for Boston. All right, thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next week.
Bye-bye.